Been looking at the Beatitudes. And I have to be honest with you, when I started this out just a couple of Sundays ago, I just thought we'd go through it and scratch the surface and enjoy looking at them. But there's been some questions that have come up. And so tonight I'm going to do an addendum on meekness. One thing that I need to say, I don't know that I've really said it at all, and if I have, it's not been straightforward enough. That this Sermon on the Mount is not just casual words. The Beatitudes specifically that we are looking at is the in-depth plan that Jesus was laying out for His disciples, His followers. And I mean in-depth plan. He starts off, as we look at the very beginning, with the poor in spirit. And then, blessed are they that mourn. These are the beginning steps or the process to the plan. And each one of them builds on the previous. Not just the previous one, but the previous ones. And so when we get to where we were this morning at being merciful, we have reached a point where we cannot fully understand unless we have felt and realized the previous four. And as we build up through, we come to the one of hungering, thirsting, shall be filled. We're going to have to be filled with Him. We're going to have something deep on the inside for us to really have a heart of redemption that is in involved with blessed are the merciful. As I mentioned this morning in closing, that the heart of redemption or a redemptive heart is a key part to being merciful. Merciful doesn't mean that we lay aside laws, government. It's the spiritual side of the redemption that even though somebody did this, as gross, as horrible, horrendous as it is, God is still redemptive, and that is our heart redemptive. Restoration. I'm still wanting to preach restoration versus demolition. I still want to preach it. One of these days, the Lord's going to let me go and preach it. I think it's vital. Redemption or reclamation rather than demolition. That's the heart. The heart of redemption or a redemptive heart. One thing that as some of us were talking before service, one thing that is hard for you and I will admit for myself, and I think that I can speak for the majority of us, if not all of us, that we have this mind block, we have this roadblock within our thinking. When we think about some of the most horrendous sins that we would say, no, I could never, I would never do that. When in reality, if it were not for grace, you see, the Scripture bears out that we must be careful how we judge somebody else because we may also be tempted. That would indicate to us that you and I, aside from God working in our lives, channeling us in the midst of our lives, and grace applied in our lives, there is no telling where we would be or do what we think we would never do. I know, I can... No, I wouldn't do that. You see, even before grace is applied, God channels. And there's an acceptance or a rejection of His channeling process. I believe with all of my heart that somebody that is completely ignorant of church, has no concept of the Bible whatsoever, that in the earliest years God is working in, is, let me say it this way, that God is faithful to an individual and there is an acceptance or a rejection of the process. I have heard too many stories of people that have been saved without ever a knowledge, that have been sanctified holy without ever a knowledge, but when they heard the preaching, they said, oh, that's what I felt, that's what I received, or that's what I experienced. That God behind the scenes, without what we consider the means, God is still faithful to people. So when we get back here to this, the blessed are the poor in spirit, blessed are they that mourn, blessed are the meek. And as I mentioned a couple of Sundays ago, or I guess it was just last Sunday, that the meek, sometimes we have a bad definition of what meekness is. We have a weak thought within, somebody that is spineless, somebody that is a jellyfish, somebody that just flows through life. That's not meekness. I would just love to read a whole bunch to you. I will try not to bore you with the reading entirely, but there is so much that I can't say it as well as what has been said. But I think that we need an understanding of meekness before we can really grasp hunger and thirst for righteousness, before we can grasp merciful, before we can grasp the next one that was on schedule for tonight, the pure in heart. How can we grasp and understand blessed are the pure in heart if we have a struggle with the previous ones, if indeed these come in a series? And Jesus certainly had a plan laid out that He was giving the in-depth understanding of what it meant to be a Christian, a disciple of Christ, a follower of Christ. So let me give you, at least to get started or to continue, whichever way you choose to look at it. Looking at this one, this third one of blessed are the meek. Martin Lloyd-Jones says it this way: as we approach this statement, let us first of all try to look at it in its relationship to the other Beatitudes. Clearly, it follows on from what has gone on before. There is an obvious, logical connection between these different Beatitudes. Each one suggests the next and leads to the next. They are not spoken haphazardly. There is, first of all, that fundamental postulate or proposition about being poor in spirit, that is the primary fundamental spirit that leads in turn to a condition of mourning as we become aware of our sin. And that in turn leads to this spirit of meekness. But we not only find this logical connection between them, but we find that these Beatitudes, as they proceed, become increasingly, look at this, that they become increasingly difficult. As though it's the step by step, moving closer to God, draw me nearer, that I might know Him. Increasingly difficult. In other words, what we are now considering is more searching, more difficult, more humbling, and even more humiliating than anything we have looked at up to this point in our consideration of this Sermon on the Mount. We can look at it, he said, like this. The first beatitude asks us to realize our own weakness and our own inability. It confronts us with the fact that we have to face God, not only with the Ten Commandments, not only with the moral law, but also the Sermon on the Mount and the life of Christ Himself. Anybody who feels that he, by his own strength, can accomplish all that has not started to be a Christian. Now, Lloyd-Jones lays it out right there, doesn't he? So the Sermon on the Mount, is it a question to us to consider? Is it a commandment for us to follow? No, it's neither one. It's not a suggestion, a commandment. It's simply the plan of God for His people. It is the process, or it is the pathway that He wants His children, that His church walks down. It's that way. It's just simply that way. I can't do it on my own. I can't accomplish it on my own. And if I think that, then I haven't even begun the process. I have not even become a Christian. No, he said, it makes us feel we have nothing. We become poor in spirit. We are truly helpless. Anyone who thinks that he can live the Christian life himself is proclaiming that he is not a Christian. When we realize truly what we have to be and what we have to do, we become inevitably poor in spirit. That leads to the second state in which realizing our own sinfulness and our own true nature, realizing that we are so helpless of the indwelling of sin within us and seeing the sin even in our best actions, thoughts, and desires, we mourn. We cry out for a great, or with the great apostle, "O wretched man that I am, who shall deliver me from the body of this death?" And so we see Jesus and hear Jesus saying, "Blessed are the meek." Now he goes on to talk about our relationship with people. You see, the problem in this thing of being meek is that you and I can see, if we're honest with ourselves and we're honest with God, we can see ourselves truly as inadequate or as helpless. We can see ourselves as utter nothingness and helplessness. We can see our frailties. We can see our weaknesses. We can see our faults. But we dare not let somebody else see them and express them to us. Are you with me? Are you understanding what I'm saying? Don't you tell me where my fault lies. Don't you tell me where my weakness is. Don't you tell me where I need to improve. And vice versa. You don't want somebody else telling you. That's what we're talking about here. It's that issue deep down inside. I am aware of my need. I am aware of my problem. I am aware of my faults. But don't you bother. Don't you confront me with my issues. You see, that's instinctively resentful for us. But when we come to this thing of blessed are the meek, we are losing sight of self in relationship to others. That we are no longer concerned or bothered when somebody else sees our fault or them looking at me seeing my weakness. That when they see it, then I can become humbled by it rather than defensive to it. That's meekness. When somebody else's searchlight is put on me instead of me doing it myself. Now, I probably should interject here that we must be careful about how we are putting the searchlight on. With what measure ye mete out, it shall be measured again. We must always keep that in mind when we're talking about somebody else's faults. Not just Matthew 7:1, judge not, but the following verses. for with what measure ye meet. Boy Jones asked the question, who is this meek person? What is he like? Well, there's a lot of illustrations given in the Bible, and he gives a few of them. I'm not going to give you all of them, but there's a few of the Old Testament characters that he takes and that are good, and we can take a look at that great gentlemanly portrait of Abraham. Abraham, you know, one of the greatest gentlemen that is said of the Old Testament. And you can see this in his life as a portrait of meekness. You can see the picture of meekness as he takes Lot and he gives Lot the preeminent choice. He does not assert himself, but he gives Lot the preeminent choice. And he does not then, as Lot takes the better choice, hold it against him in begrudging fashion. And then we also find that as Lot chooses the better and finds himself in predicaments that are less than desirable, and the war takes place or the battle takes place and Lot and his family is taken into captivity, Abraham takes up his arms and takes up his men and goes after those kings, and he takes them captive, as it were, and he brings back all of those that were taken captive, all of the spoil back, and he refuses to accept payment for any of it. It's meekness. He doesn't assert himself. He doesn't let evil run rampant. He doesn't let sin go unharnessed, but he goes after, but he does not assert himself when he could have. We can see not only in the life of Abraham, but we can also see in the life of Moses. He says that Moses is actually described as the most meek man on the face of the earth. If we take a closer look at Moses, what was his life? He could have, by being the son of Pharaoh's daughter, he could have had everything at his fingertips. He could have had everything. But he evaluated all of it, and he saw it for what it was, and he humbled himself. He humbled himself. To what? Oh, he became the great leader of Israel. No, let's back up. We dare not jump ahead to what was the end result. We must back up to see what he humbled himself to. He humbled himself to the complete will of God. He did not know and understand all that was to take place. He simply, even though he looked at himself as unable, incapable, unable to speak, he was not the man to do it. He humbled himself to do the will of God. Meekness. How about King David? How about King David? We're trying to find out what is meekness, because we have sometimes and oftentimes a warped sense of what meekness is. And so we take a look now at David. Now don't go jumping off on the time where David fell and sinned a great transgression. Let's look at David himself and see the good points in David's life. David was told that he was to be king. David was anointed to be king. But instead, rather than being puffed up, he remained a meek individual. In other words, he did not assert what he knew was coming to him in face of all that Saul threw at him, literally threw at him. Saul tried to kill him. Saul tried to destroy him. Saul over and over and over again was unjust in his treatment and unkind in his treatment and murderous in his treatment. But David never, never asserted himself, even when he stood at Saul's feet. He could have smote his head. Do you see meekness there? It's not that David was weak. It's not that David was not capable of standing for himself. It's that he was not asserting himself. He was allowing God to work in his life. The will of God to be moving or fulfilled in his daily life. We can look at Stephen in the New Testament. We can look at Paul in the New Testament. These are individuals that did not back up in the face of sin, did not back up in the face of adversity, but they did not assert themselves or raise themselves to some kind of a higher standard. Or a higher position, I mean, not a standard, but a position. And so we see that this meekness and lowliness of heart is a reaction to other people. It's a way that is dealt or that is given in dealing with scorn and persecution and sarcasm and derision. Look at Jesus Christ in the Garden of Gethsemane, and he gives us a very clear painting of meekness. Not my will, but thy will be done. Even though he was in equality with God, he was the Son of God. He humbled himself. He became a servant, even unto death, the death of the cross. That is meekness. That is lowliness. That is true humility. That is the quality which he himself is teaching us at this point. Lloyd-Jones says, well, then what is meekness? We have looked at the examples. What do we see in them? First, let us notice that it is not the natural quality. It is not a matter of a natural disposition, because all Christians are meant to be like this. It is not only just some Christians, but every Christian, whatever his natural temperament or psychology may be, is meant to be like this. This is the plan, he's saying. Now we can prove that easily, he said. Take these various characters that we've mentioned, apart from our Lord himself, and I think that you will find that in every case we have a man who was not like this by nature. Think of the powerful, extraordinary nature of a man like David, and yet observe his meekness. Paul the Apostle, a mastermind, an extraordinary personality, a strong character. Yet consider his utter humility and meekness. No, it's not a matter of natural disposition. It is something that is produced by the Spirit of God. He said, let me emphasize it by putting it this way. Meekness does not mean indolence. Meekness does not mean indolent. Indolent means slothful and lazy. Meekness does not mean slothful and lazy. There are people who appear to be meek in a natural sense, but they are not meek at all. They are indolent. That is not the quality of which the Bible is speaking. Nor, he says, nor does it mean flabbiness. There are people who are easygoing, and you tend to say how meek they are, but that is not meekness, that is flabbiness. He said, nor does it mean niceness. Now we're getting into some very serious concerns here. Nor does it mean niceness. There are people who seem to be born naturally nice. Do you know somebody like that? Well, sure you do. They're born naturally nice. But that is not what the Lord means when he says, blessed are the meek. That is something purely biological, the kind of thing you get in animals. One dog is nicer than another. One cat is nicer than another. That is not meekness. So it does not mean to be naturally nice or easy to get along with, nor does it mean weakness in personality or character. Still less does it mean a spirit of compromise or peace at any price. How often are these things mistaken? How often is the man regarded as meek who says anything rather than have a disagreement? Let's agree. Let's try to break down these distinctions and divisions. Let's smooth over these little things that divide. Let's all be nice and joyful and happy. No, he said, that's not it. Meekness is compatible with great strength. Meekness is compatible with great authority and power. These people we have looked at have been great defenders of the truth. The meek man is one who may so believe it in standing for the truth that he will die for it if necessary. the martyrs were meek. They were never weak. Strong men, yet meek men. God forbid that we should ever confuse this noble quality, one of the noblest of all the qualities, with something merely animal or physical or natural. What then is meekness? He said, I think we can sum it up this way. Meekness is essentially a true view of oneself. Hear this. Meekness is essentially a true view of oneself, expressing itself in attitude and conduct with respect to others. It is therefore two things. It is my attitude towards myself, and it is an expression of that in my relationship to others. You see how inevitably it follows being poor in spirit and mourning. A man can never be meek unless he is poor in spirit. A man can never be meek unless he has seen himself as a vile sinner. These other things must come first. But when I have that true view of myself in terms of poverty of spirit and mourning because of my sinfulness, I am led on to see that there must be an absence of pride. You see where we're going deeper and deeper with what Jesus is giving to be the plan for His followers, for His people? There must be an absence of pride. The meek man is not proud of himself. He does not in any sense glory in himself. He feels that there is nothing in himself of which he can boast. It also means that he does not assert himself. You see, it is the negation of the popular psychology of the day which says, assert yourself, express your personality. He said, The man who is meek does not want to do so. He is ashamed of it. The meek man, likewise, does not demand anything for himself. He does not take all of his rights as claims. He does not make demands for his position, his privileges, his possessions, his status in life. A meek man is not even sensitive about himself. Well, there's so much more I'd love to just keep reading and meekness always implies a teachable spirit. You're getting a better picture of what Jesus is saying meekness is? It's not that we don't stand for something. It's not that we don't believe in truth. It's not that we don't defend truth. But it's our personal relationship with others that we do not assert ourselves, that we are not boastful, that we are not of the proud sort. I have nothing to boast in. Paul the Apostle said, I have all of these things that I could brag about, he said, but I count it all as waste. Why? Because he said that I might gain him, that I might know him, that I might be what God wants me to be. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. What does that mean? Now, I didn't spend much time on it. I wasn't looking at the for theirs parts, the other side. But really, simply, what it's saying is that the person that is meek is satisfied in life. That they have everything, even though they have nothing. Goldsmith said it this way, having nothing yet hath all. The Apostle Paul said it this way, as having nothing and yet possessing all things. Sure, it's an obvious thing that a Christian is going to reign with Christ. But the Beatitudes he's speaking about are the here and the now. And the person that is meek, that is not asserting, is satisfied with God's plan, is satisfied with what God is doing. And I brought that out a couple of or last Sunday, that the meekness is simply a moldedness to God's will and God's plan. I'm satisfied in what He gives me and provides and does. And then we come to hunger and thirst. When a person reaches that point that it's no longer I, but Christ, then there's that desire, that hunger that pushes and drives and draws a man and a woman closer to God. And then as he is filled, his heart becomes a heart of redemption, or a redemptive heart looking at people around. Even though they've sinned and transgressed, I, in my poor in spirit sense, and the mourning and the meekness and the hungering after God, I have a heart of redemption towards them as God does. Not just a shallow walk that Jesus is talking about here. It's an in-depth plan, an in-depth purpose of what he wants and desires for his people, his followers, his church to be. And if we long to be what he wants us to be, we can know him in his fullness. Let's stand together this evening.